Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I can guarantee you at least 10, if not more, other people that are out here still living, just people of the community. No, way more. I don't care about anybody getting in trouble at this point. I don't care at all. Write a letter, make a phone call. Contact me. I would not ever even say your name. Just, where is she at? Where is she at? After 16 years, you don't care about the legal standpoint of it. Just want to find her. And then I don't even want to know exactly what happened to her. How was she here? I don't even care about any of that. Just want to find her. I believe the only way we're going to find her is if someone with the damn truth comes forward and just says, I'm not going to tell you how I'm involved. I'm not going to give you any of that, but here she is. That's the only way we're going to find her, or is if someone comes along her remains by accident.
On June 24th, 2002, 19-year-old Brooklee Laux arrived home and realized that her Greenwood, Indiana apartment had been burglarized. She called 911 and the police came out to take a report. After that, she left her apartment around 5:30 p.m. and a witness claimed to see her get into her blue 1990 Chevy Corsica. The witness reported that Brooklee got into the passenger side and a man was driving the car. Brooklee phoned her mother that evening and said she was going to spend the night at her boyfriend's house. He lived a little more than 30 minutes away. But Brooklee never made it to her boyfriend's house, and she was never seen or heard from again. This case is full of unanswered questions, rumors, and possible suspects. More than 16 years have passed since Brooklee disappeared, and her sister Mista is still searching for answers. Several of the people believed to be involved in this case have died. But her sister Mista has never given up on finding her. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 145 of The Vanished, Brooklee Laux's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. When Brooklee disappeared, she was just getting her life back on track after an abusive relationship she had as a teenager. She was attending classes for her sobriety and planning to go back to school to become a veterinary technician. 19-year-old Brooklee had already been through a lot, but she was working to make positive changes in her life. She was living with her sister, Mista, and she had just gotten a kitten that she would never abandon. Like most sisters, Mista and Brooklee were especially close, but even more so because they were only 18 months apart. In fact, their father held Brooklee back a year in school, so they grew up in the same grade. Mista shared with us what was going on in their lives back in 2002 when Brooklee disappeared.
Brooklee had a troubled past. when she was a younger teenager. When all of this happened, Berkeley had left a five-year teenage relationship, and that was not healthy. It was abusive. There were drugs. And Berkeley started turning her life around. She was doing these classes, and she very happy, very excited, and oh goodness, she's so beautiful. She started looking healthy again and was finally enjoying her life. And then this happened.
We know that Berkeley had recently left an abusive relationship, and she shared a close relationship with Mista. Mista spoke a bit more about Brooklyn's personality.
She was the mouthy one. She was the feisty one. It's so funny because she's so tiny. I am more the timid one, but I'm the little sister. Brooklyn, she's so beautiful. Everything about her. She had what they call a gypsy hippie soul. She loved animals more than people. She was very content living a simple life. She would do anything for anybody that she loved. She was my absolute best friend. We had our sister fights, of course, but she was my best friend, without a doubt. She did not give a care what anybody thought. It was, she's going to live her life and do what makes her happy. And like I said, she wanted a simple life. She kind of had that hippie soul, would love music. Her dream in life was to be a veterinarian. Her love for animals was very, very huge. Where I say she was feisty is nobody was going to talk down to her.
At the time of her disappearance, Berkeley and Mista were living at their dad's apartment together on their own, while he was staying at a lake house that he owned. On the day Berkeley disappeared, she walked into her apartment to find that it had been burglarized. She called the police, who came out to take a report. That evening, she told Mista and their mother over the phone that she was staying with her boyfriend for the night. This is the last time that anyone ever heard from Berkeley. Mista told us what she remembers from that day.
She was at our apartment, and I was actually at my mom's house. And she had called me and said that someone had broken, and she was scared. And I said, well, call the police. She called the police, and she called me right back until they got there. And she made the report, and it was things missing, such as technology things, TV, computer, electronic stuff. And I talked to her after the officer had left, and she said that she was okay and she was leaving to go to her boyfriend's in Martinsville. She was going to stay there. And I just said, okay, I love you. And then that was June 24, 2002. June 26th, 2 days later, she didn't show up to work. We both worked for my dad at his restaurant. And my dad was off that day, but my best friend had called and said that Berkeley didn't show up and she had a bad feeling. So I called my parents. They went and filed a missing persons report after we realized we couldn't find her anywhere. So then that's when the police started their investigation. I remember them coming out and taking statements. And then I think it was a week later, and they worked nonstop.
There was that witness that I mentioned, the one who saw Berkeley get into the passenger side of her car and a man getting into the driver's seat. Well, this witness also saw the same man that was driving Brooklyn's car carrying a computer across the parking lot around 3:30 that afternoon, before Berkeley arrived home. A computer was one of the items taken from the apartment. The witness described the man as a white male about 6 feet tall with shaggy, sandy-colored hair. They thought he looked to be about 19 years old or in his early 20s. A few days after Berkeley disappeared, her car was located. The vehicle showed no indication that Brooklee had been there, and mysteriously, the driver's seat was pushed all the way back. At 5'2" tall, Brooklee wouldn't have been able to drive with a seat like this. Mista told us about some of the other odd circumstances regarding the vehicle's recovery.
And when her car was found, her keys were on the floorboard. The seat was back like someone tall had been driving it. Brooklee, she drove, and she's itty-bitty. She drove all the way up on the steering wheel. After this story came out to our local news, there were people that came forward that said that they were in a drive-thru in this big parking lot where her car was found, and they remember seeing her sitting in the passenger seat, kind of like slumped over, but like in and out of it.
Brooklee's boyfriend was initially investigated. So often, it's the person's significant other who's responsible, but they were able to account for his whereabouts. Mista never suspected Brooklee's boyfriend, Tom.
Her boyfriend, Tom, was very good for her. He helped her grow into the young woman that she wanted to be, away from her troubled past. And Tom was great. Tom was very great. I still talk to him from time to time. He obviously was one of the first people questioned and even interrogated by the police and searched his home, and it affected him too.
This is where Brooklee's case takes a more sinister turn. At the time of her disappearance, Mista and Brooklee's father, Scott, was abusing prescription pills. He was friends with a man named Joe Nowicki, who may have been supplying the drugs. After Brooklee disappeared, police named Joe Nowicki as a primary suspect in Brooklee's disappearance. However, Joe died of cancer in 2003, unable to provide any answers to what happened to Brooklee. Prior to his death, Joe gave conflicting accounts of his activities the day Brooklee went missing. One of the stories he told police was that he and Brooklee had exchanged illegal drugs at the end of June. He also told investigators he believed Brooklee had met an ill fate, but did not elaborate on how he came to this conclusion. Mista described the Joe Nowicki she knew before Brooklee's disappearance as being like an uncle to her. They would do things like go out to breakfast. He would sometimes make comments about harming people, but she always assumed he was just joking, that he was just a silly old man. After Brooklee disappeared, she began to learn more about Joe's past. She realized that maybe these jokes weren't jokes after all. You're probably wondering what made the police focus in on Joe Nowicki. There were several things that pointed to him. It just wasn't enough to proceed with a case against him. Going back to the night Brooklee disappeared, one of his neighbors claimed to have seen Brooklee's car in Joe's driveway that evening. That night, Joe made calls to several people asking for a ride. This included calls with a few young men who had been friends with Brooklee's ex-boyfriend. They also found Joe's fingerprint on the hood of Brooklee's car. Joe had an excuse for why his fingerprint was there, though. He had worked on Brooklee's car in the past. One witness came forward and said they had spoken to Joe on the night of Brooklee's disappearance, and he stated that she had been missing for an hour and a half, but not to talk to the cops. It appeared that Joe knew Brooklee was missing before anyone else realized. One of the people that Joe called that evening was a neighbor, and he told the neighbor that he had been fishing. He asked the neighbor to come pick him up, and when the neighbor got there, it didn't appear that he had been fishing.
A week later, there is a man named Joseph Nowicki. He was one of my dad's good friends, and they went to go interview him. And he had some marks on him, and that caught their interest, and they started pulling phone records and stuff. Phone records showed he called two of these boys that I'm talking about, and he also called my dad. There are numerous phone calls from the timeline. So then a neighbor went and picked him up. There's no sign of him fishing. Joe Nowicki was picked up from 37 and 44. The night of the 24th, a week later, we find my sister's car in that same area, in the exact same vicinity. After her car was found, we continued our foot searches and stuff. He absolutely became a suspect, and We ended up finding drops of her blood in his garage during a search. And they took my blood, my parents' blood, and determined that it was, in fact, hers. And it was splatters on the ceiling, on the walls. And it was not a good size amount. It was very scattered and very scarce. It actually took them, how they found it was one of the detectives sat down because it was extremely hot that summer. She had sat down in his garage to take a break, and where she was sitting, she was eye level with it was either a sewing machine or a computer. And she saw one little spot. And then that's how they found the others. There was a big area that had been cleaned, but they could not determine what that was. So in that search, he actually ended up getting arrested on unrelated charges for a habitual offender for having firearms. He was a felon. He has a very dark past. We knew nothing about his past. He was in prison for murder, attempted murder, rape, armed robbery. And so when he went to jail, they arrested him right there. Oh, and child pornography. But they arrested him. And then he bonded out. And as he bonded out, they were standing outside waiting for him. And they arrested him on another charge.
Mista had shared that Joe was her father's friend, but I wanted to know what his relationship was with Brooklee.
My sister did odd jobs for him, helped care for his horses, did reupholstery work for him. And when that's another thing, when her blood was found, that's what he kept saying. Oh, she cut her finger doing some reupholstery work. Obviously, we knew that wasn't true just because the way the splatters were. But it wasn't enough blood to actually say, okay, she was murdered right here. Do I think Joe is responsible for hurting her? 100%, absolutely. And it was in his garage. And he was pure evil. And then I kind of hold my parents responsible for that because I'm telling you right now, anybody that my kids are around, I'm searching them. I'm looking them up and I'm going to find out everything about them. Joe is around us almost every single day.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Shortly after Brooklee disappeared, Joe Nowicki was convicted on firearms charges related to the search police conducted looking for Brooklee. He was sent to prison. However, as he had been diagnosed with terminal cancer, he didn't stay behind bars. Joe Nowicki died just a year after Brooklee went missing.
Our local prosecutor, he was actually putting together a trial against a case against Joe and was going to go to trial for her murder even with no body found. But then Joe died.
Mista mentioned that Joe Nowicki had a past, and his past is quite shocking. But the Laux family wasn't aware of his history prior to Brooklee's disappearance. His record of violence goes all the way back to 1965, when Joe was just 16. He shot both his sister and brother-in-law 11 times. Remarkably, the two survived. For that crime, he went to prison in 1967, but was released in 1972. Just days after his release, he shot a man 3 times in the head at close range. He took a guilty plea and served 11 years in prison. He even escaped from prison once in 1979. He was again released in 1984. The following year, he was charged with a rape and robbery. He took a plea to the robbery charge and the rape charge was dropped. Joe was released from prison in 1989. One of the most shocking things about Joe is that he's suspected in another missing persons case. Back in January of 1996, 54-year-old Jean Derringer disappeared from nearby Beech Grove, Indiana. Jean knew Joe Nowicki. They had worked together at a local high school as maintenance workers. Joe was the last known person to see Jean. He claimed that he took Jean to either purchase or borrow a truck. The funny thing was, he couldn't remember where he had dropped Jean off at. He said Jean got out of his vehicle, went and got the keys, and then drove off in this truck. Joe claimed that he followed him back to Jean's home and then went on his way. As he was leaving, he claimed that Jean got into a different, dark-colored truck with an unidentified woman. Jean's sons became alarmed when they couldn't find him. Upon further investigation of his home, they found a blood-soaked mattress that had been turned over in an attempt to hide the blood. There was also a bullet lodged in the wall. Jean's driver's license was later found on the ground in a gas station in Indianapolis. Jean Derringer's disappearance remains unsolved. Once Brooklee's disappearance came to light and Joe's history was exposed, other local jurisdictions began to suspect him in some other cases too, some unsolved rape cases. During the search of his home, they also found child pornography on his computer. When speaking with some of his associates who had drug transactions with Joe, they learned that he often threatened people. One man spoke of a time that Joe chased him with a loaded shotgun. Apparently, this man had lost some of Joe's money from a drug transaction. Those who were working with Joe were scared of him. They even found a man that he had threatened back in 1996. He said he would cut him up into pieces and put him in barrels in the lake. So Joe Nowicki was not just some older guy who liked to talk big. He had actually committed many serious crimes, and it's unknown what else he may be responsible for. Could Joe Nowicki have been a serial killer? Mista believes that Joe was responsible for Brooklee's disappearance, but that there are others who knew what happened to her. Phone records indicate that their father Scott was in touch with Joe on the day Brooklee disappeared.
But when he became the prime suspect, the police started digging into phone records, and there were phone calls made to numerous other people that were friends of mine and my sister's and my dad's. So there is a group of people. It's Joe Nowicki, my dad, and a group of about 4 or 5 boys that we went to school with that the phone records show. There were all these phone calls made the night of the 24th. No one ever said anything. My dad was down at our lake house, and the phone records show there is numerous phone calls to our lake house where my dad was. And then they weren't lasting very long. But there are phone calls from, all right, there's numerous from Joe and my dad down at the lake house. there were calls from my dad and my sister, from my sister at our apartment to my dad down at the lake house. There were phone calls from Joe Nowicki's cell phone pinged off the tower at 37 and 44. Mind you, that's where we found my sister's car. Him calling numerous people trying to get a ride. Then my sister's ex-boyfriend, one being called. And then he was with another boy and who got a phone call. It was pretty much just that group, the calls back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that right there is what makes it so suspicious, you know? And then there's a certain point, all of a sudden, all the phone calls stop, and my dad and Joe never spoke again. And these boys and Joe never spoke again. Do I think someone bigger than Joe is involved in all this? Yes, because he was getting his drugs from somewhere else. I wish I knew what those phone calls were about. With my sister, my dad, and Joe, I think those phone calls were about the apartment and the stuff being taken out of our apartment.
As Mista mentioned, there's also a group of boys that included Brooklee's ex-boyfriend, who Mista believes may know what happened. Mista shared what Brooklee's former relationship was like and the toll it had taken on her.
That teenage relationship that she was in, that was a drug-infested, abusive relationship. When she finally left that, because Brooklee did drop out of school, and she went and ended up moving in with that boyfriend. I will never forget the day she called me and was like, you have to come and get me. This isn't good. I went and got her. And I think about all the time what she looked like and then to where what she looked like right before, like when all of this happened to her. And she was a completely different person. She enjoyed life. She wanted more out of life. They said she was in IOP classes for herself because she loved going to them. She enjoyed getting herself healthy. And I know this all sounds cliche, and I'm not just saying this because my sister is a victim here. That bad relationship that she was in, it was the most toxic, unhealthy relationship. Obviously, that stuff back then wasn't talked about and put out there how it is now about toxicity and healthy habits and unhealthy habits. And they were just very codependent on each other in the most unhealthy way.
Not only did this relationship wear on Brooklee's emotional health, her ex-boyfriend deteriorated after Brooklee's disappearance and became a chronic drug user. Brooklee's ex-boyfriend was part of the group of boys that Mista mentioned earlier, whose phone records include calls to Joe Nowicki around the time of Brooklee's disappearance. Mista believes that anything the ex-boyfriend may know could possibly assist investigators in answering some of the questions about what happened to Brooklee.
He is a severe heroin addict to this day. He's one of those boys in that group that I was telling you about. He absolutely knows something to some degree. Whether it be he knows who else exactly is involved or I don't think he knows to the degree of like where exactly she's at, but he knows more about what happened. Absolutely. And phone records even show that.
Since both Joe and their father Scott are now deceased, many of the possible answers to Brooklee's disappearance are gone. However, Mista strongly believes that the group of boys Brooklee's ex-boyfriend hung out with could possibly hold the key piece of information that would help find Brooklee.
They 100% have some answers. One of them was identified as driving my sister's car, leaving our apartment, was identified out of a photo lineup from a neighbor. But anytime the police go to talk to him, he checks himself into a mental institution, and then his family went as far as threatening to sue the Greenwood Police Department, and they don't have any other evidence or anything. I hope it haunts them, and they finally come forward one day and say something so selfishly so I can have that closure, but more importantly so my sister can be at peace. My children, My daughter did not know her aunt. I had my daughter a couple of years after, but I see my daughter struggle with it, and it's not fair.
Mista was not aware of their father's struggles with addiction at the time. She did later find out that Brooklee did know about it. To further add to her suspicions, she later found out that her dad and Joe had staged the break-in for insurance money.
My sister did know about my dad's addiction. She was asking him to stop getting these things from Joe. We did find out that the burglary, the apartment, when it got broken into, we found out that that was set up between my dad and Joe for insurance money. So my sister was probably ticked off saying, what are you doing? You're, no, this needs to stop.
Mista says that she believes Brooklee's disappearance was somehow related to her father's prescription pill abuse, and that his friend, Joe Nowicki, used Brooklee to satisfy a drug debt. Joe had been a frequent figure in their father's life for some time. But Mista recognizes now that something wasn't right with Joe, and that their father was in some way involved or had knowledge of what happened to Brooklee.
Why I think this happened to my sister was my dad was using painkillers. He was very, very addicted to them. I struggle with this because my dad was my most favorite human being on this earth. And I guess I was pretty naive to not notice, but then again, I was a kid myself. My dad, I know for a fact, he was using painkillers and he was getting them from Joe. I think Brooklee wanted to help my dad. We have come to the conclusion of the night of the 24th. Okay, I'll just give you my thoughts on it. The night of the 24th, I believe what happened was there was a debt of narcotics owed to Joe Nowicki, and my sister was hurt because of that. Whatever happened to her in Joe's garage that night. He is pure evil. We begged him. He would taunt the detectives and write them letters. And if you let me out of prison to die at home, I'll tell you everything you need to know. Admitting to it. But he was actually diagnosed from the FBI analyst as a sociopath, a psychopath. They begged the judge, do not let him out to die at home because he will not say anything. This is a game to him. She let him out to die at home, and he refused to say anything. The problem with Brooklee's case is when you get drugs involved, that's where all these different people come in. You know what I mean? Different groups of people. Like Joe, he was getting these pills from somewhere. So then whoever he was getting those from, they're involved. It's a chain effect. I guess I didn't acknowledge any of that for a long time. For me, it was cut and dry. It was Joe hurt her. He's the only suspect. He won't tell us where she's at.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Even if her disappearance wasn't related to a drug debt, there are other theories that have been tossed around. In one of Joe's many stories, he told someone that Brooklee had set up a drug deal for him, but he realized the person was an undercover cop and he was mad. Could he have killed her in an act of revenge? The police don't believe that story because they couldn't find any law enforcement agency that had an undercover officer working in that area. We know that Brooklee was in the process of turning her life around and was doing really well. She was living with her sister, working, going to classes, and had a great boyfriend. We also know that she knew about her dad's addiction to pills. We just don't know to what extent. When her apartment was broken into and things were taken, she was probably upset and angry. If she caught wind of the fact that it was a setup that Joe and her dad had planned, could she have gone to confront Joe? He was already supplying her father with drugs, and now he had him committing insurance fraud. Was Brooklee watching her father's life spiral out of control, and she went to Joe's house to try to stop it?
I believe the extent that she knew about my dad's drug problem was she maybe thought at first it wasn't so serious, and then she realized how bad it really was. I believe that's when she probably started going to Joe and saying things to Joe on her own. My dad's out of hand. All of this is out of hand. I don't know the extent that she knew because I absolutely knew nothing.
Investigators never formally named their father as a person of interest in Brooklee's disappearance. After some questioning, her father retained an attorney and refused to speak. His attorney stated that the police were questioning Scott about things in his life that weren't related to her disappearance. We can only assume that may have been about his drug use and other possible criminal activity. Police were able to obtain a subpoena, which forced him to talk. He was granted immunity from prosecution. They spent 5 hours questioning him, and the police chief stated that it appeared that Scott had a memory lapse about certain dates and times they asked him about. Miss Donnell feels certain that her dad was at least aware of what happened to Brooklee. But she also shared how important her father was in raising them and what a special place her dad holds in her heart all these years later.
Our parents, they got divorced when I was an infant. Yes, my dad had primary custody of us girls. There was a time when it was back and forth through the courts and stuff. Custody battle with my parents, but for the majority of our lives, my dad had primary custody of us. The police tried getting my dad to talk to them, obviously, when all this happened. The police started questioning my dad's involvement when Joe became a suspect. My dad instantly lawyered up and had to be subpoenaed to talk to them further. And when I say I was naive, it was I made every excuse in the world back then, you know, for him, because I guess subconsciously I knew but didn't want to believe it. I was so dependent on my dad for everything. I was more so like what I would consider a 15-year-old. There were a lot of things that I chose to not even acknowledge or accept because I now know because I didn't want to believe them. Now that I'm accepting certain things, I've gone back and I've read through different articles. Like, I didn't remember my dad having to be subpoenaed to talk to the police until maybe 6 months ago.
Despite the fact that he may have been involved in Brooklee's disappearance, Mista feels as though law enforcement has been respectful of her relationship with her father.
You don't talk to me about my dad just because when all this first happened and they would mention my dad to me, I was a brat and I would be like, I am not talking about him. Any news reporter that talked about my dad, I'd rip my microphone off. I'm not talking about him. Stop it. Stop it. But they are very gentle when they say, your dad had a problem, but don't ever doubt that your dad didn't love you. They know. They suspected my dad probably when he lawyered up or had to be subpoenaed, you know. But I couldn't ask for better law enforcement to do this.
After Brooklee vanished, their father sunk back into his old habits and died a few months after her disappearance. Mista described his steady decline after Brooklee went missing.
After this happened, my dad, he did nothing but cry all the time. He stopped working at his restaurant. Now I realize the way he reacted and how he started living his life after she went missing. And so the cause of his death, I was told, was esophageal eruption. I have since found out that it was probably suicide, do I know for certain, intentional or not? I was told it was esophageal eruption. He had a hole in his esophagus from acid reflux, and he had choked on his own vomit when he was sleeping. When I first came to that conclusion that probably intentional suicide, because there was methadone and alcohol in his system, he couldn't live with that. He probably did it intentionally because of guilt.
You've heard in many other cases how law enforcement failed to properly look for a missing person or conduct any real investigation. Brooklee's case is not one of these, and law enforcement has been actively looking for her ever since she disappeared. Mista had nothing but good things to say about the Greenwood Police Department.
I remember them coming out and doing the report. A lot of people will have negative things to say about the Greenwood Police Department, how they handled my sister's investigation, but that is just what they see on the news. That's what they're going by. They don't know the reality of all the work that they actually do that isn't made public. There's rumors that go around constantly. You don't know what's true or what's not true, but the detectives that I have, they look into everything. They're great. They work extremely hard. I don't think it's their fault that we haven't found her. You know what I mean? Like, it's not because their lack of work. They work their ass off. My sister's case has affected them. They want to find her. I don't think they'll ever be satisfied if they have to leave their careers not find, and she has not been found yet. I will say they 100% genuinely care. There's two of them that I'm particularly close with. They check on my family. Anytime anything comes in, they communicate that with me. And if anything pertaining to my sister, they 1,000% keep in communication with me. And they don't care if I call them 100 times.
While Mista is grateful for everything that law enforcement has done to find Brooklee so far, she said there's still people out there who know more than what they're sharing. After Joe Nowicki passed away, investigators turned their attention to those who may have some answers. We know that police offered Brooklee's father immunity in exchange for information, but whatever he may have known died with him. However, Mista believes that group of young men in the community have more information. Since we know they were in contact with Joe Nowicki that night,
people out there know, and nobody has came forward, even after being offered immunity, that I don't understand. Because if it was their loved one, their friend, anybody that they cared about, at least 10 people that know bits and pieces, that refuse to talk. But there's no hard evidence against these people to make them talk. That is the most frustrating part.
Despite the number of years that have passed, law enforcement in the community hasn't given up searching for Brooklee. They continue to follow up on tips and conduct searches.
Any tips that they get, they act upon them and very close with the detectives. It's almost like they've become like a family almost to me. There's one detective who 100% is just as frustrated with this as I am. On my sister's birthday, on certain important dates, I will receive a message. I am sorry I've not found your sister, but I can guarantee one thing, and that's I'm not going to stop trying. That we can't do it without people saying anything, because there's nothing else that we can really go on. And they've done property searches. There's this property in Morgan County, probably 10 miles from where her car was found. When you hear that they're searching a certain property and it's like, oh my gosh, could this be it? Then you kind of feel guilty for thinking that way, because everybody wants to hope that they find their loved one alive, but that's not reality. But any search that they've done, it's come up nothing.
As so many families with missing loved ones can relate, Mista shared what her hopes are for finding Brooklee today and what the community's involvement in Brooklee's case has been.
So I didn't realize how quote-unquote big of a story it was to the media. She was on the front page of our local paper every day for about 6 months. It was a very, very big story locally, and people still talk about it, which that's very humbling. People still talk about it, which lets me know people have not forgotten her. Anytime any remains were found, I would obsess over it, and I'm calling them nonstop. So finally, what I said to them was, just do me a favor. Don't tell me about absolutely everything. Only if it's 100% pertaining to her case. There's a body found in the White River. The White River here is the nasty, dirtiest. Bodies are found in that almost daily. But what they would do is they would contact me. There's a body found in the White River. And then I would obsess over it. So I just told them, for my own sanity, I will always do what I feel I have to do to help my sister and be her voice, because she doesn't freaking have one. I'm the only one that can do that for her, to give her a final place. And to, I feel like she's not at peace until we find her. That's, a lot of people disagree with that. That's my own thoughts and feelings. But at the same time, I have 3 children, you know. I feel like my hands are tied sometimes, because what I love to play PI and go out and do my own investigations and not stop until I get answers. I'm not going to stop until she is found.
So what happened to Brooklee Laux on June 24th, 2002? Was the burglary of her apartment related to her disappearance? There are so many unanswered questions in this case. Did her father know more than he shared and took those secrets to the grave? Why did he retain a lawyer after being questioned by the police? We know that everyone has a right to an attorney. Was he just protecting himself because of his own criminal activity? Or did he know more? And what about Joe Nowicki's conflicting stories and Brooklee's blood that was found in his garage? Then there's this group of younger guys that included Brooklee's ex-boyfriend. Could one of them have been responsible for her disappearance? Who was driving her car that evening? And was that person there at Joe's house when the neighbor spotted Brooklee's car there? Personally, I don't know what to think, but it appears there may be people in the local community who know more about what happened to Brooklee than what they've shared with investigators. At the time of her disappearance, Brooke Lee Laux was 19 years old. She had dark brown hair, blue eyes, and was 5'2" tall. She was last seen wearing a light-colored blouse, dark-colored capri pants, pink sandals, and a gold ring. Witnesses say that she was seen getting into her 1990s Chevy Corsica with an unknown white male. Anyone with information about Brooke Lee's case is urged to call Crime Stoppers of Central Indiana. You can leave a confidential message at 317-262-8477. You can also call the Greenwood Police Department at 317-882-9191. You can follow Brooke Lee's case on Facebook at Brooke Lee Laux Missing.
I remember when all of this first started, and I started getting involved with these different national missing persons organizations, and then our local ones, and I would meet these families, and their loved one had been missing for 10 years, 20 years. And I remember thinking, there's no way in hell I can do that. There's no way. How could I live with not finding my sister for that long? Like, that's not even a possibility. I never, like 16 years, I never thought we would get this, all this time would pass and her not be found. Sometimes that's where anger comes in with me, and it's like, how in the heck can you just not find somebody? How is that possible?
That brings us to the end of episode 145. I'd like to thank Mista for sharing her story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There's a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from North Carolina. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid.
Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.